Hello and welcome to Raise Your Vibration About Alzheimer's, How to Shift Your Emotions, Shine Your Light, and Show Your Love. I'm your host, Lori LaCarle, and I am so pleased that you are here. Today's interview is Staying in a State of Well-Being for Spouses, Children, and Caretakers. And I'm very honored to say that with us today, we have Harrison Klein. Hi, Harrison.
Hey, Lori, how are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Oh, sensational, wonderful, terrific, amazing, phenomenal, outstanding, incredible, and awesome. Just a little bit resplendent and, you know, inspired.
Wow.
Inspired by this program.
I think that's all we needed.
That's how you start.
You know, I trust. What's that?
The primary essence of doing great things is not to get to a place of well-being, which is where most people try to get to, but to start from a place of well-being. Switches everything.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Well, I'm hoping and trusting that it's going to rub off on us today. So thank you so much for being here.
I am quite honored. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm quite honored as well, so thank you. So let me tell you some more things about Harrison Klein, and then we'll let him get right to it. Harrison Klein is a human behavioral transformationalist, excuse me, and global luminary, an educator, an internationally known and sought after personal growth, organizational, and business consultant. He has been teaching for over 31 years and has taught and consulted over 4,400 individual people and 30 corporations. He advises people and organizations from all walks of life on personal and professional development and achievement. He has appeared in numerous film documentaries, including Luminous Worldviews, Tapping the Source, and has been interviewed on over 160 radio and television talk shows and featured in newspapers and magazines and telesummits globally. Harrison has dedicated his life to understanding the workings of the universe, social dynamics, human nature, and behavior, and travels across the globe sharing his unique perspectives, has designed and produced major personal growth products such as the I Am Effect, Effortless Abundance, 21 Ways to a Wealthy Mindset, Life Mastery, the World Intuition Summit, the Masters Gathering, Women, Power, and Purpose, and shared the stage with many noted inspired educators, innovators, luminaries, business and spiritual leaders like John Assaroff, billionaire Bill Bartman, including Batman Clark Kent, and Wolverine. I love that part. Most especially.
Couple of my peeps.
Well, that sounds like a heck of a lot of fun, let me tell you. A lot of variety and fun. So that's just all incredible stuff, honestly. So congratulations for all of your achievements and your far reach. It's really quite inspiring.
Well, thank you. You know, there's no limit to what can be done when you have a mission. And you have a desire and you have a commitment. So, and you're inspired. So those things make all the difference in the world. There is no, you know, accomplishments are just something that is in the process of your learning and the process of your growth. So it's not about setting out to do something. It's about being something and making a contribution. So
I love that. It's about being something.
Awesome, yes.
Yes, and I absolutely agree with you. Wow, thank you. All right, so where would you like to start with our staying in a state of well-being?
Oh, well, geez, I mean, the state of well-being is our natural state of mind where we don't have emotional spikes and dips. When we are in a steady state of well-being, we can see, we can actually view reality much more objectively. We get a chance to control our emotions, which allows us to control our finances, which allows us to be in control of what happens in our relationships. Not necessarily manipulating other people, but manipulating our ability to deal with things in a way that's congruent so that our conscious, subconscious, and superconscious are aligned with each other, and then we act as a whole being as opposed to dissonant decisions that are made within these three areas of our consciousness. Well-being is a state that is, you know, a constant for good self-esteem, a constant for happiness, a constant for productivity, a constant for inspiration, desire, and all the elements of creation in the finest way, from courage to light to grace, et cetera, et cetera. So well-being is probably for me, it's the most significant place we can, you know, achieve. And then once we've achieved that, then our entire life opens up and our future opens up for everything beyond that. You know, I have a history of, in my first 28 years, I was autistic. I was quite depressed, radically withdrawn in a way. And so, you know, all that I yearned for was to be in a steady state of well-being. All that I yearned for was to be happy, to be out of this pain that I was experiencing, out of that hell experience that I was in. All that I yearned for was the ability to connect with people that I so loved but had no ability to even, you know, be in the same room with, because I had stabbing pains in my body whenever I would get close to anybody. So there were so many difficult experiences that I had in my younger years. But having transcended that experience through a moment of grace, you know, I wouldn't trade any of it for anything in the world, because it's what made me who I am and connected me with the highest and most significant parts of my soul that allow me to be in a state of oneness. And a state of oneness and well-being is, you know, being the highest feeling that of creation, or being a creator that we can, as far as I can understand, being that we can achieve. We are pure light at the state of creation, so at the state of well-being. So the more you feel good, the more well-being you are involved in, the greater becomes your effectiveness on this planet for yourself and for others and those you love and for the entire planet, and the greater becomes your vision for everything.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Oh, that's beautiful. Wow. So what parts of that transformation in your life do you think would be most helpful for our audience today?
Oh, undoubtedly, in my experience, the most important thing that can happen is to understand the power of the words I am, the power of the I am principles. If you come down to it, what happens is that very few people really work with the I am principles. They don't understand that those two words are the invocation of the God energy on the physical plane. And when we use the words I am, or whatever we attach to it, I'm a great manifester, I'm happy, I'm handsome, I am ugly, I am, you know, overweight, whatever. When we use those are the words that invoke the energy that creates that reality for us. And it creates a self-image. Whenever you say I am something, you immediately come into the present moment. You create a self-image. And that image then is accepted by your subconscious mind, which then drives your behavior in order to fulfill whatever that image happens to be. So it's very, very important to understand it, because most people misuse their I am. They say, oh, I'm so sick and tired of that. I'm depressed. I'm so angry. I'm not very good at this, or I'm all screwed up about this or that relationship or that person, or I'm, you know, and when they do that, they don't realize the effect it's having on programming their subconscious to experience those words in reality. We speak ourselves into truth. We speak ourselves into our experience inwardly and externally. So as we begin to understand that, the words I am take on magnificent proportions, because they control reality for us. They control reality for each of us. A short example of that is that, you know, in the last presidential race, when McCain was running against Obama, knowing what I know about the I Am principles and having been a center of that experience on so many different levels. McCain said when he was beginning to run for president, he said, it was more toward the center of the campaign, but he said, I'm a maverick. I'm coming into Washington to make changes. So he identified himself as a maverick. What Obama did was he identified himself as, I am the one we've all been waiting for. And at that moment, the entire election was won in Obama's favor. McCain couldn't compete with that because the identity principle, the I am principle, is the most important thing that happens in all of our lives, regardless of what experiences we've had. And the words I am not only create reality, but they create identity. And identity, properly used, is our life experience. So there's nothing like it. There's nothing that it is the law of being. It is the law of resonance. It activates the law of attraction. It is extraordinary in its scope, and it actually is the cosmos. So what we're talking about is a law of being, or I am. And when we talk about that, being can't be done. It can't be made. It can't be had. It simply is, or it's not. So question is, how can we be anything? Being, how can we be wealthy? How can we be happy? How can we be healthy? How can we be loved? And the answer lies in those two simple words, which happen to be the two most powerful words in our universe, I am. And whatever you attach to those words gets played out. So in other words, if you think, say, or act in accordance with I am healthy, you're going to experience health. You'll create health. You'll be health. You'll be the state of health. And to go even further, you know, your I am statements should be end with a noun rather than an adjective, not I am healthy or not I am wealthy. You should say I am health. I am the entire state of that being. And being the state, we get where we are and not what we want. So, you know, basically it's a journey and it requires our well-being. It requires our heart to be open for that. And it creates it's the content of our individual, it opens up the content of our individual consciousnesses, our unconscious, our subconscious, and superconscious, and captures what experiences that those words will deliver. So, you know, it's really, really important thing. They are principles. The I am is a principle, and it's not linear. It's nothing. It's not about sequential order. You know, it's about, you know, trusting the process and trusting yourself when you do it deliberately. So that's basically what the I am is, and those are the most important things you can do in this world. It invokes the law of attraction, it invokes the law of resonance, it invokes the law of abundance, it invokes everything. And, you know, it creates the thoughts that create our feelings, that create our reality. Mm-hmm. How's that for a few things?
Well, I've been practicing those principles for quite a few years, you know, always a work in progress, as you know, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. I just, you're right, this is where it's at, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all need to lead our own cause for, you know, the expression of our magnificence. And the I am is the first principle that moves everything else. The very, very first principle. It's the identity principle. And without identity, we don't experience anything. Identity, by definition, is a condition, you know, of being oneself and not being something else. So I am is the principle of that. So I am the being I choose to be in any given moment or for that moment. And when we choose one thing, we're also choosing not to be something else. And our identity can change instantly, but bottom line is, our identity is our relation, our world in relation to ourself. And so that demonstrates, you know, that being comes first. And the words I am are the first thing that cause everything else. They're the first cause of everything. In other words, they are the direct creator words. They are the words of the direct creator, which is our connection to supreme being, whatever you want to call that source.
That's right, exactly. Wow. I love everything you said. Go ahead.
Don't
Don't get me off on a rant, Laurie.
I think we're enjoying it quite well. Keep it going. No, you're real good. I just wanted to repeat something you said because I just love how you said this, that in choosing one thing, we're choosing not to be something else, which I really love.
That's right. So, you know, we can only, on this physical plane, we can only have one experience at a time. When we transcend the physical plane, when we get into the higher dimensions, you know, we are non-local, and so we can have multiple experiences simultaneously. But on the physical plane, the reason why we came to this earth, or one of the reasons, or one of the aspects or elements of being an earth being, or be wearing this bio suit of humanness, is so that, you know, it focuses our attention, our life force, basically, into a single focus. And so we can, as the human part of us, we, you know, we focus on one thing at a time, and we can't be anything else. And that is determined by what we call ourselves, by how we identify ourselves.
Sure.
So we can't be, in the same moment, we can't be an engineer and an athlete and a milkman and a developer of IT information simultaneously in the same moment. We can't, not as human beings. We can as spiritual beings, but we can't as human beings. So when we choose one thing over something else, we are actually choosing not to do anything else. So it's focusing our attention into a particular, you know, dimensional experience, and understand we're dimensional beings and we're vibrational beings, and without IMs we cross all dimensions, but with but no one can understand. In the human body, you can't understand many different dimensions. You are basically restricted to four dimensions, and you can't have any more than that as a human. When you start to transcend the humanness of yourself and go into higher states, then you can have multiple realities, and you can go into all kinds of different dimensions, you know, the dimension of light, the dimension of creativity, the dimension of self-actualization, the dimension of influence. You know, there's so many different dimensions out there. There's the dimension of, you know, space and time, and how do we move that? How do we accelerate? How do we cross it? How do we understand, you know, the depth of all the processes of creation, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all dimensional things that are not at our beck and call in the human form, but they are in our beck and call at the higher states, because we have access to all knowledge and all experience at the higher states. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I'm loving every bit of it, and loving how you're, you know, explaining it, presenting it as well. So that's great. Thank you. Okay, so I know when you and I had spoken last time, we were talking about things happening for a reason. So do you want to take what you've just discussed and you know, kind of explain that further?
Well, I mean, everything happens according to law in the universe. There's no such thing as a random act. I mean, much as we'd like to think that things happen haphazardly or are accidental, or, you know, are also connected to luck, nothing is connected to luck or haphazardness or whatever. Everything happens by law. It is a structure that, you know, no place in the universe other than on an earth plane does the concept of randomness have any value. Everything happens as a part of the cause and effect relationship. So everything is a cause and everything is as an effect. And, you know, the beauty of our experience as human beings is to discover the cause and effect relationship between all things. You know, the fact that we have a particular reality is caused by the way we think. The way we think is caused by how we identify ourselves. The way we identify ourselves is caused by our creativeness, or our states of mind, our creative beingness, our or I am. Everything that we do has a cause, the reason why we do anything. You know, we can trace it back to something that we have thought, and the reason why we experience anything can be traced back to a thought. And then what we can clump together as conclusions are really the experience of, you know, the overall state of mind that we're in. So we're not happy because of our experiences. Our experiences are there because we're happy. We're not, you know, we're not depressed because of the people around us or the things around us. That shows up to prove that we have a state of mind of depression. So everything happens for a reason. And the reason is, you know, what you put into motion. What is your cause? You know, first cause is beingness. I am. You know, you can't have a cause earlier than that. because it just is. There isn't anything before it. There's nothing after it. So it's eternal. So how you identify yourself is first. But you know, all reasons come from something else. You know, the reason you have money is because you've worked for it or you've given some value for it. The reason you have a good body is because you've earned it due to a number of different things, in the way you eat and the way you work, the way you take care of yourself, et cetera. Everything has a reason. And if you trace it back, you can find the origin of the reason. And if you don't like what you see, you can change it. You can change your life experiences simply by creating a new series of I Ams and a new series of strategies and mythologies and modalities that help you move out of a state of limitation into a state of openness, into a state of pure openness, which then allows the universe to give you whatever experience you have as a desire. So,
yes.
So reason is primary. You know, we have five faculties of mind, Lori. We have six faculties of mind. And, you know, the better and the more we can work in those faculties and understanding and applying those faculties in a effective manner, the greater becomes the effectiveness of our lives. You know, you'll find that the wealthiest and the most creative and the most imaginative and the most, you know, amazing people on the planet, you know, all are masters of the faculties of their mind. And those faculties are very significant experiences and very significant understandings. Once you begin to master those, you know, there's no limitation to the places and things, you know, you can see and do. I mean, I'm sounding like Dr. Seuss here, but all the places you'll go.
That's right, exactly. As a retired teacher, I can definitely relate and appreciate Dr. Seuss. Goodness. Now, here's something I have to ask you. Is, you know, a lot of times, and it's not just Alzheimer's, obviously, but that happens to be what our conversation is about, but, you know, anything that comes up in life, you know, whether it's a disease or something else, you know, there tends to be a lot of victimhood that people either, you know, see other people experiencing, for the people maybe that have the disease, or, you know, if they're affected in some way by it, you know, they might feel they're a victim of it. Can you help them with that? And how can they use their I Am presence, the I Am principle to, you know, to turn that around and, like you said, you know, create what it is that they would like to experience?
You know, first of all, victimhood is sort of a disease in our society, and it's a disease of the human condition. We are not victims, whether we know it or not. It's just a matter of the fact that we are not conscious of the reasons or the cause of things. So, you know, people talk about victimhood. You know, let's take a really radical example of that, like a woman being raped. And this is going to sound really radical to your audience and to all audiences, but I'm going to pose this situation. It's going to be very controversial, Lori, so understand this. that's the perpetrator of a crime and the victim of a crime are exactly have the same energy. They are resonant energies. So a woman who is raped is also, you know, somebody who has the same energy as the perpetrator, the rapist. So, and I know that sounds radical. They say, well, you know, people don't deserve that, or they didn't invite that. But the truth of the matter is, if you look deeper, yes, they did. There's something about going on inside of their minds and in their hearts that have the energy of either being raped or raping somebody. There's a tremendous amount of anger in that situation. There's anger before that, and what leads up to it is the action. So nothing happens without a reason. We're talking about reasons, right? So the reasons are, you know, I am angry, or I am, because of my circumstances, because I haven't been able to control my circumstances, I have unfulfilled desires. I don't believe people are good. I believe this is a hostile place on the planet. It's a difficult situation to grasp hold of. I have no control, blah, blah, blah. All these kinds of things that are going through people's minds are what, you know, the law of attraction puts together in order for an experience to happen. So, you know, when we are a victim, it's because we are thinking victim thoughts. In the fact that we are out of control, the fact that things are happening to us rather than for us, it's a misinterpretation. All suffering is really a misinterpretation of a reality that we're in. It's a misinterpretation, a misperception of the experiences that we're having. We cannot suffer without having a misperception. So this is very, very important. So the way to get out of suffering is to find out what the misperception is so you can come back to the truth. And the truth always is love. And you can always, if you trace things back, no matter what it looks like on the outside, rape, fear, guilt, you know, anger, murder, et cetera, it still comes back to a point of intentional love for us, for a learning experience, for our growth experience. There is no other experience except love or fear on this planet. And fear is not the absence of love. It's not the the antithesis of love. It is simply the, you know, resistance to your experience. And it's a high level of resistance to experience. So it's an unacceptance of the situation. Unconditional love is the highest state we can be in, which transcends us out of the human condition into the spiritual condition, into the dimensional world, into the vertical dimensional world. So, you know, when we are victims, we are misinterpreting what's going on. We do not see things directly. As our emotions go up, our intelligence goes down, the greater the emotional portion of us expresses itself, the less intelligence we have in those moments. Our soul actually leaves our body, if you can fathom that. Our soul leaves our body in moments of anger and fear and all those other things, and then it comes back when we are calmed down again. But you know, we have no emotions during those, we have no intelligence during those kinds of emotions. So when we are victimized, it's because we have very high emotions with a misinterpretation around those things. So, and that happens around everything. So that's why I say the state of well-being is primary to our ability to create any portion of our lives that are deliberate and that we want. So, you know, if you state if you doubt your state of being, you actually are judging yourself and you're judging other people. And in those judgments, you know, those things stick to you because it's a reciprocal universe. Whatever you put out, you get back. It's called the law of karma. It's called as you sow, so shall you reap. Whatever action, what goes around comes around. You know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So everything happens in that particular way, and there's nothing that doesn't have, anything that doesn't, that isn't explainable just means you haven't yet traced the cause of what's going on. But all things have a cause. Nothing happens randomly. There are no accidents in the universe. Even through chaos, even through the chaos theory, just means we haven't understood what the connection is yet. You know, including Alzheimer's, including, you know, cancer, including, you know, crazy teenage hormones, whatever it happens to be, you know. So right. It's you know, It's a state of being that we step into, which then activates the law of resonance and the law of attraction. And by law, we must experience something when we're putting that out. So if we experience anger and fear and frustration and guilt and all those other things, those things will integrate themselves into our lives if we sustain them any longer than a very short period of time. So if we practice being angry, which most people, you know, do because they like the drama, those people who are in that process, they like the drama. So because they like the drama, they find value in that. They find value in the experience of, you know, intensified emotion. You know, they experience the drama in really dramatic and really intense ways. So, the universe is perfectly orchestrated and perfectly balanced across all experience, all dimensions, all time, and all space. And in understanding the fact that everything is perfect, you know, we step into a state of well-being. We step into a state of I am this or I am that deliberately, as opposed to I am victimized, which is a statement of loss of control. So, you know, we have complete control over what we think, and what we think creates our lives. So if we understand that, our effectiveness goes radically up. And if we practice it, you know, we become masters of that control, that I am. We become masters of our I am ideas, our I am beingnesses, our I am states of mind. When we become masters of that, there is no limitation. It's limitless. We step into the eternal. And we recognize the eternal without it being the physical process of what most of us believe to be, you know, experience in this earth plane, and something of the senses. It's way beyond the senses. So it is the non-physical experience of ourselves as this immense being of light, which is covered by the fact that we have a bio suit in a human body, and covered by the fact that, you know, we accept the degree that we can judge, that we want to experience particular kinds of things in judgment. And as we accept that decree, we create victim experience. And when we remove that decree, when we go beyond judgment, you know, we allow the universe to do its thing, and what it shows us continuously is radical love. You know, we step into the state of infinite love, and we recognize all things as this incredible energy field, or this series of incredible energy fields. And the physical doesn't make any more difference to us. Am I going out of the scope of what we're talking about here?
No. I am loving this, because you've shared a few things that I've never heard before. I mean, most of this, you know, I've done so much reading, studying, and so on. But a few of these things I have never heard before. I'm taking lots and lots of notes. So, I think it's all perfect.
Well, you have a recording. You can listen to it.
So true. And I will be, trust me, I need to. There's several things that need, you know, several repeats for digesting. So, but yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And I, you know, I think your point about the victim and the victimizer, basically, I think what you were saying was that when their energies match, you know, when they're vibrational match or whatever.
That's right. The energies are the same for the victim and for the perpetrator. Yeah. If you're being stolen from, if somebody breaks into your house, it's because you have a fear of somebody breaking into your house or doing something negatively to you that removes something that you know you're attached to in a way. If you are being if you are being lied to, it's because you're suspicious of someone with some other person. If you are frustrated about a relationship, it's because you are not seeing the good parts of that person's personality, and you're overlooking the good parts of that person's personality, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. And, you know, I think that's so easy to do with the Alzheimer's topic because, you know, particularly depending on what level the person is at, and, you know, how much those around them need to take care of and whatnot. You know, I think sometimes, you know, speaking for myself, you know, you kind of get caught up in the other things. And it's so important to, you know, to keep going back to and remembering the love that's there, the love that's always been there. And, you know, using that as your guide, you know, to try to speak from that place and respond from that place. And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, when a lot of repetition is happening with conversations, you know, it might be a little bit hard to remember, but it's so important.
It's incredibly important. It's everything. I was speaking to a guy this last, about 2 weeks ago at a conference, and I asked him what his spiritual principles were. And he said 1,000 times a day, he says to himself, how can I give more love in this moment?
Wow.
And I thought that was one of the most beautiful things I ever heard.
You're not kidding. Wow, wait. Yeah. Ooh, imagine if we all lived with that question. Oh, my goodness.
Mm. Yep.
Wow.
Very cool.
Beautiful, beautiful. Wow. Well, I can't thank you enough, Harrison. Wow, wait. I know you could go on and on, but unfortunately, we are near the end of our time. But I thank you so much for all that you have contributed to this conversation about Alzheimer's. And you know, I mean, you've just really laid out exactly what people can do in any and every area of their lives, which is fabulous. You know, any area, like you were saying, that they're feeling dissatisfied in or whatever. And, you know, I think, too, when you work to clear one thing up, other things tend to clear up as well, you know.
Yep. So, you know, the decision to be free of pain, difficulty, victimhood, all those kinds of things free up everything. So the decision to be free is the highest state you can start to come into before transcendence. So, you know, you deal with that. You release the significance of the difficulty of the past. You release the significance of your emotions and step into the significance of your love. And then all things work out beautifully for you in every way, because there isn't anything but love out there. So there's a zillion forms of fear, but there's only one form of love. There's only one love. You know, so, yeah.
That's a great point. I really like that. I really like that. Yeah, and you know what? Like you were saying before, even something just as simple but yet totally profound, I am love. I mean, if that's one of the things that I know,
absolutely.
You know, speaking, you know, with the Alzheimer's topic is, you know, something that I'm always reminding myself about. So here are three simple words, yet totally profound. I am love.
I am unconditional love. I go one step further.
Oh, I like that even more.
Which means you accept all parts of what your experiences are. Without any judgment. So it's allowing the validation of the universe to be there. So
yes. Oh yes, that's so much better. Thank you. I'm writing that one down. That's beautiful. Thank you
cool.
so much. Now I also know that you have a fabulous free gift, which is a recording. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
I don't know. What I offered you guys as a free gift. I could tell you about my products, but, you know, I mean,
oh,
you know,
all right.
what I have you guys, what gift did I say I was going to give you guys? I'm sorry, you refresh my memory.
A hero, a recording.
Oh,
on
the hero's journey. The hero's journey, okay, yes. So understand that, you know, throughout literature and throughout life, we all take this journey that is an amazing process from birth to death. Now, all literature is based on, and all psychological growth is based on this hero's journey, this process of going through these states of being, from being, you know, a newborn to an infant to a toddler to a teenager to being a young adult, so on and so forth. We all go through stages of development in whatever it is we do, just as we go through stages of development and learning our skills and our experience. And in so doing, as we go through these stages, we find a hero's journey. We find a shamanic journey, one in which, we become more of ourselves, more than magnificent uniquenesses that we all are, the state of light that we emit, which very few of us get to because it's so covered by conditioning and difficulty and thoughts of shame and guilt and fear and, you know, trying to protect something and so on and so forth. So the hero's journey is, you know, the subject of Jesus, the subject of Buddha, the subject of life processes. And there are stages of development. And if you know the stages of development, wherever you are along the hero's journey, you also know what to look forward as to the next stage that you'll be experiencing. And if you can look forward to the next stage, you actually accelerate the process of stepping into the next stage. So that's what the hero's journey is about.
Wow, beautiful. Well, that's incredibly valuable. Wow, thank you. Oh, wow. My head is swimming.
Well, you know, just as long as you keep flailing your arms, you'll be okay.
That's right. Thank God I love to swim. Wow. Well, I thank you so much because this is really where it all starts. So
that's where everything starts, you know. Your state of being is where everything starts. Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
And
thank
your
you.
State of being starts with an I am. So
Exactly. And it's so nice because now our listeners can take that and plug in whatever, you know, they need most to experience. I am love, or I am unconditional love. I am peace, whatever it is. You know, I am patience and so on.
Yeah.
So, wow. Thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in. I know that you got the heart of it because Harrison got to the heart of the matter for us. So, I wish you well on using the I am principle. And obviously, we know it will work for you. You know, it works when you work it. Right, Harrison?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Harrison. Thank you, listeners. Much, much appreciated. And this has just been an incredible conversation on this topic. And in so doing, has just shed light in every area of our lives. So thank you, one and all. Peace and blessings to you.
Decide to be free.